Breaking news into First Take this morning. University of North Carolina men's basketball coach Roy Williams is retiring. After 18 seasons as head coach of the Tar Heels, the iconic blue, Williams is a three-time national champion at UNC, and he's been to 9 Final Fours in his Hall of Fame career's 33 seasons as a head coach in total. Stephen A., what's your reaction to the news and ultimately Roy's legacy?
First of all, it's a couple of things that I want to get off my chest. First things first, I want to give much praise and thanks to Roy Williams, who I think has been an outstanding coach and vastly underappreciated, because anytime we look at Chapel, if we look at that Piedmont Triad, not Piedmont Triad area, but just that whole area in Durham and what have you, we've thought about Mike Krzyzewski and Duke. I would remind everybody that Roy Williams has won 2 national titles. It wasn't just 9 Final Four appearances. Now, I'm talking about North Carolina. I'm sorry, Carolina. I know Kansas, but at North Carolina as well. The man's won 2 national titles at North Carolina. He's won 74% of his games in his 18 years. Major props to him for all that he has done for the game. We're going to miss him. Having said all of that, we should remember him as one of the all-time great coaches in the history of college basketball. The man is a flat-out winner. He got it done a lot more often than not, as far as I'm concerned. Major props to him. Now let me get to where I want to go, Max Kellerman. Because I want to throw out a couple of names there, because obviously this is one of the premier spots in college basketball. North Carolina, UNC, Chapel Hill, Dean Smith, the Dean Dome, where Jordan and Worthy and Kenny Smith and everybody else play. Oh, we know all of that. Vince Carter, Antoine Jameson, the crew, the
list goes on
and
on. Okay, everybody.
Let me give a look. I want to be the first to give a hit list of coaches who should be considered, okay? Let me first listen. Jay Wright at Villanova, we all know what an outstanding coach is. I feel remiss if I neglected to mention him, even though he ain't going nowhere. He's going to be at Villanova. But I just want to throw that name out there. Hubert Davis has been an assistant coach there for 9 years. Mm-hmm. He played 12 years in the NBA. We got to give him some love and respect. Jerry Stackhouse was an All-American and was a star in the NBA. He's been coaching at Vanderbilt the last 2 years, although he's had 2 losing seasons. But you're thinking about recruiting and everything. I'm going to shock the world. Max Kellerman, y'all might not know this name. Lavelle Moten, the head coach at the University of North Carolina Central and HBCU. Max Kellerman, the man has won 60% of his games. He's won 4 regular season titles. He's won 4 conference titles. He's been to the NCAA a couple
right
of times.
There.
The man is right there. He's a Raleigh native. Should have had the damn North Carolina Central job if they had the sense. Now, that's not to say their coach, all right, Kevin Keats, hasn't done a decent job. He's had winning seasons all 4 years. Only took them to the NCAA tournament once in the 4 years, not the last 3. They've won their share of games. But in this day and age, as I think we have seen and we have proven, there is a paucity of African Americans in prime positions in college sports overall. We don't talk about that enough. We don't talk about the importance of recruiting nearly as enough with the advent of a lot of things, being able to come to the NBA early, going to the G League, having other opportunities. You need somebody that can recruit, that's got a track record, that's homegrown. University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, is only about 25 miles away from Raleigh-Durham. I believe that Lavelle Moten, the head coach for North Carolina Central, should be strongly considered to be the next head coach in Chapel Hill. And that's saying a lot, because I'm from Winston-Salem State. At HBCU. They the enemy. They the competitor. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm executive producing Why Not Us in concert with Roadside Entertainment and Chris Ball. And it's about that program. So I've gotten to know the man, but I believe he can coach. I believe he can get it done. And if I'm the University of North Carolina, before I hire anybody, I interview that man for the head coaching job at the University of North Carolina, which is right up the road.
I don't know about that, Stephen A. I don't know. I'm going to have to consult with the Council of White People, because it may be too many African-American coaches.
Oh, well.
It may go
oh,
above the number.
We wish.
Be go above the number. Everyone's going to get very nervous.
Max,
we
you're
wish.
Hilarious.
Go ahead.
But no, he's right, Molly, because the jobs become available, and we always lament the fact that they're African Americans are way underrepresented as a percentage of participants in the sport.
That's right.
In the head coaching position. And now here's a position open, and why don't people think outside the box in terms of like what program you're going to come from? I think Stephen A. makes a lot of good points. I'll just say about Roy Williams, I know it's not exactly like Dean Smith and then Roy Williams, like a little interim period, a couple coaches,
sure.
But basically he follows Dean Smith. It's impossible. How are you going to follow Dean Smith more, like, within 5 or 10 years and winds up winning, you know, championships there and carving out his own legacy? It's a tremendous, like, there are some, I mean, it's a little bit, there's more of an overlap if you think about, like, Aaron Rodgers replacing Brett Favre. But if you're in Green Bay, you go, boy, we got taken care of at quarterback between two guys for all that time, right? Or Mickey Mantle replacing Joe DiMaggio, the same thing. I'm just saying, the Tar Heels, boy, for a lot of decades now, going back to the 60s, had basically, it's a slight exaggeration to say, two coaches with multiple championships with each coach in that program. That is a tremendous legacy to basically follow Dean Smith and carve out your own legacy the size of Roy Williams is amazing.
I just want to get back to my whole point. And the reason why I bring this up is because this is obviously, you know, HBCUs are near and dear to me. Chris Paul didn't go to an HBCU. Chris Paul went to Wake Forest University, All-American, number 3 overall pick in the NBA draft, number 4, I'm sorry. You know what Chris Paul brings to the table. Chris Paul could have done a lot of things. Chris Paul wanted to highlight that program. Chris Paul could have highlighted a lot of coaches. He wanted to highlight that coach. There's something to be said. And so what I'm talking about is anytime I see a coach, Master P's son came on my show and announced that he's going to Tennessee State.
ESPN
Thank you very
Plus.
Much. That's right. And
Stephen A's world.
He decided he's going to Tennessee State. You've got a situation right now where you're looking at African-Americans throughout this country looking for an option other than college basketball. And it's not just about trying to get the bag. It's also about enjoying your college experience and playing for the folks that you want to play with and the coaches that you want to play for. And I believe that when you have a coach at an HBCU that has succeeded to the degree that Lavelle Moton has achieved at University of North Carolina Central, you're talking about schools that are 30 miles apart. I mean, if you sit up there and you got an opportunity to get a brother that can recruit, because we're talking about North Carolina. It's not a private university like Duke. It's a public university. You talk about Chapel Hill, Lavelle Moton.
Yeah.
Interview that man, North Carolina. Interview that man.
Okay.
I'm with it.
We're getting familiar. Thanks to Stephen A. All I got to say is Carolina Tar Heel Blue, that is iconic. And you know you all have the starter jacket too, just like I did back in the 90s. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Well, that's a decision they made. I think it's a mistake. They should listen to Dr. Fauci and the scientists and the experts. But I think it's not responsible.
Okay, that was our President Joe Biden with Sage Steele on SportsCenter last night discussing the Rangers having fans at full capacity for the April 5th home opener. Our president saying that it's not responsible and we should be listening to the scientists and Dr. Fauci and that Ken Max. What's your reaction?
Well, I think he's right. I think that it is refreshing to have, you know, the grown-ups in charge. And the fact that the president is saying, hey, the behavior of people, and maybe we've been acclimated to it. Oh, OK, people are just behaving recklessly. The vaccines are here. They're working on that's looking promising in clinical trials, like a Tamiflu kind of thing, like, you know, something you could take that really treats symptoms, even if you get COVID. The end is in sight. And things look like they're going to get back to normal before too long. But the scientists are still worried, I think partly because because of that, people let their guard down and kind of rush back. People are taking unnecessary risks. So I think the president is simply trying to be responsible. I do feel, listening to him about the timetable, based on what I understand about surplus of vaccines pretty soon and all this, that he'd rather under-promise and over-deliver than do the reverse. So let's err on the side of caution and things might not, by July 4th, maybe small get-togethers, and maybe by the fall there's some semblance of normal. And if you prepare, you hope for the best and prepare for the worst and take a kind of conservative approach that way, at least in terms of the messaging, then if anything, people will be pleasantly surprised if it turns out better than that. The danger is if you don't send those signals and tell people to rush back and they're over anxious, overly eager to get back to normal. In fact, what winds up happening most likely is that we delay getting back to normal because it'll spike again. So I think the president is just being responsible.
I think the president is being responsible as well. But I want to take a more optimistic approach, Max Kellerman. And let me finish this thought, because I really, really I want to get where you're coming from. I want to hear what you have to say to where I'm coming from. The president is being responsible. He's right in what he said. It's a bit dangerous to when you talk about 100% capacity. But let's take an optimistic approach for a second here. How about challenging the citizens of Texas, specifically Dallas, because that's where the Rangers' home facility is. This stadium is right outside Dallas, right by AT&T Stadium, the home of that other team. Okay, how about looking at them and saying, "Listen, we can't stop you. We don't think this is the wise thing to do. But since you're going to do that anyway, you have an opportunity to steer America in a profoundly positive direction." When you walk to the stadium, wear your mask. When you go inside that stadium, be cognizant and considerate of people around you. Let's do all that we can while committing ourselves to enjoying some semblance of normalcy, to recognize and heighten our level of sensitivity to the times that we're in. Understand that and do everything that we possibly can do to keep the numbers going down. Let's make sure we try to do that, because the worst thing that could happen is if there's a slew of COVID cases that come about from you all packing into the stadium, because clearly that's the wrong example to send. But you have an opportunity, Texas. You have an opportunity, Rangers fans. If you're going to go to this game, if you're going to sit up there and just ignore the scientists or ignore the precautions, which we're not advising you, Max is not advising you to do it, I'm not advising you to do it. But if you're going to go to those games anyway, okay, then how about you want to exercise your liberty and all of this other stuff that you talk about? Fine. Be mindful of and considerate of others and the potential damage that you can cause, not just to yourself, but others, if you contract the virus, and do everything you possibly can under the sun in going to that game to ensure that something like that doesn't happen. Because if good news comes out of it and there is no spike, right, and you don't hear about a whole bunch of cases because people, just descended upon, Rangers home stadium, then that's a good thing. Because if that happens, then that'll send the right message to people all across the country that you can return to normalcy to some degree if you act right.
Well,
how about that approach?
I think theoretically that's right. I think the philosophy of that is right. Whether that works in practice or not,
so
sure.
I'm not trying to say it does.
But actually, you have a point, because if people, this has become a political issue. Doing simple stuff, not being stupid, putting on a mask and stuff like that, being considerate, became a political issue at a certain point. I think temperatures would need to cool in order for people to be receptive to that. But why not try it if people are going to jam into the stadium anyway?
I'm just saying, them accountable. Understand that you have an opportunity to set an example for the rest of the nation if you're going to go to that stadium Monday.
I would say, what do you have to lose by putting that message out if they're going to the stadium anyway?
Right.
And hopefully people behave responsibly.
Yeah.
All right, we'll leave it there. I got my first vaccine yesterday. Feeling good.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To the Octagon we go. After dethroning Stipe Miocic last Saturday in UFC 260, UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou, who's with us on First Take, he's ready for more, fellas. Ngannou said he'd like to fight twice more this year and name John Jones as who he'd like to fight. I love this. Moving up from light heavyweight to heavyweight. Max, talk to me. Ngannou versus Jones. Who has more to gain if this goodness is going to happen for us, this gift in 2021?
The answer is actually Ngannou, who I think will be favored in that fight. I haven't checked the odds. I believe by the time that fight comes off, by the time they're walking to the octagon, if that happens, Ngannou is favored. Because whatever you think of John Jones pound for pound, you might think he's the best pound for pound ever. You'd have a case. That's 205 pounds at light heavy in the UFC. Ngannou's coming in 265. That's 60 pounds. Even if Jones bulks up, Stephen A., we saw Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, two separate weight classes.
Yeah.
And Ngannou's been active, and he's getting better and better. So you could say, well, so it would be an upset for Jones. That's more to gain. Sometimes when one guy already has a name brand that rings bells around the world, where the event will be bigger than anything the other guy's ever been involved with, that actually, even if the other guy's favored, even if Ngannou is favored, he will benefit from the spotlight on him, particularly if he can beat John Jones, because that's a name everybody knows. I think Ngannou has a chance to be a crossover superstar. In a way, maybe, and he has a chance to change culture in sports in the sense that the baddest man on the planet's the heavyweight champion, right? At least in boxing it was. But it hasn't been that in the UFC because we haven't had a big monster in the UFC who was dominant and consistent. Brock Lesnar's a big monster. It didn't last very long. That would be Ngannou. And if he beat John Jones, he would occupy the same space in people's minds that Mike Tyson once did, that Joe Louis once did, that the icons in boxing once did.
Well, first of all, I think you're wrong. Secondly, I think he already occupies that in my mind. I think the greatest thing that ever happened to the UFC outside of Conor McGregor in terms of being mainstream, particularly in this nation, is the fact that Francis Ngannou is the new heavyweight champion of the world because he walks into the octagon with bad intentions. Nobody expects his opponents to finish the fight. Somebody's going home early, and it's usually them, not him, obviously. And so you look at it from that perspective. I would tell you, Max Kellerman, I would make a legitimate argument that John Bones Jones has more to gain from this fight because he's coming up from light heavyweight, because last time we seen him, he was 60 pounds lighter. And I'll give you the reason why. Stipe Miocic went against Daniel Cormier, towered over him. Mm-hmm. He looked like a welterweight standing next to Ngannou. When they showed up, I was like, my Lord. And he was 230 pounds. And I'm saying, oh, my God. That's how massive that Francis Ngannou looks. So as great as John Bones Jones is, as phenomenal as he is, and I think he's the best in the world, the fact that if Ngannou caught him and knocked him out, as great of a victory as that is, because he's got granite in both hands, that wouldn't really surprise a lot of people if Jones got caught. If Jones found a way to beat that monster, moving up, first heavyweight fight, and that's the dude that you beat, all of this talk about Jones, he's probably the best, he's elite, John Bones Jones is that.
All of that will go out the window. He beats Francis Ngannou.
He's the best pound for pound ever.
The best pound for pound. He's the baddest man on the planet. I mean, Francis Ngannou is that now. But Jones to move up to take that guy on? If John Bones Jones wins that fight, I don't know how we can look at him and not say he's the best
ever. I think he has the best argument.
He's the best ever. And that's what I'm saying. So to me, Francis Ngannou, as great as John Bones Jones is, everybody knows Francis Ngannou can put anybody to sleep with those fists. But John Bones Jones, if you do that, I don't know what argument. What else would there be to say?
What you're arguing, to me it seems, is that in terms of where we rank them in the sport, in terms of what they have to gain from their competitive legacy, I agree with you. But I think there's a bigger thing at stake for Ngannou. If you can beat the biggest name brand really in the history of MMA, at least at light heavyweight or up, the shining star who's supposed to be the best ever, even if you have a crazy size advantage, you are going to elevate yourself in the pantheon of sports stars differently.
But there's a couple of fights that John Bones Jones has had recently where it was tight and you wondered which way the decision was going at light heavyweight. So what I'm saying to you is that, but we still recognize his greatness. But for him to have some of the issues that he has had outside the octagon, for him to still be in the mix, for him to be moving up, he ain't moving up to fight. Like Daniel Cormier, light heavyweight, and was a heavyweight champion. Stipe Miocic, I mean, as great as he is, he's still great despite his loss. The bottom line, if John Bones had beat him, all right, that's a great, great accomplishment. But this monster, Francis Ngannou?
Yeah.
I mean, if John Bones Jones beats him, there's nothing bigger.
And then what? Then
nothing
what? Then where do you go from there if you're John Jones? You just beat Ngannou.
I'm trying to tell you right now, I'm not saying he would. He could retire, and we'd be saying the greatest ever.
I agree with that.
By the way,
he beats Ngannou, if they fight and John Jones wins, I think he'll be almost universally recognized as the greatest pound for pound.
Let me say this. What if he knocked him out?
Yeah.
But I can't see that.
But what if now take the reverse. If Ngannou wins in dominant fashion, he's one of the biggest stars in sports.
Yes.
He's not at the moment yet.
But it wouldn't be the greatest ever. John Bones Jones win that fight, he's the greatest ever.
All I know is if this happens and I have my second vaccine by then, which I should, I might be going to this one because this is going to be
something special. Should have your second vaccine
within
3 weeks.
Speaking of special, yeah, I will, Stephen A., so I'll be ready for it. Maybe you'll be there. Okay. Speaking of greats, let's bring in NBA great Penny Hardaway, head coach of the Memphis Tigers, joining us now. Penny, there he is in the sunshine, glowing. Good to see you, sir. Penny, you're going to be back in the sunshine in like a day. This isn't always about you. Penny, talk to me about the breaking news of the day. Roy Williams retiring after 33 seasons, 18 at UNC, and 3 national championships.
Yeah, truly phenomenal career. Everybody understands and loves Coach Roy Williams. He's done so much for not only Kansas, North Carolina, wherever he's touched, but just for basketball, period, for the legends that he's coached against, that he's coached, the players that he's touched, the lives that he's changed. Just truly phenomenal career, and we're definitely going to miss him.
Penny, it's always good to see you, my brother. Congratulations on the NIT championship. I want to know, how are you feeling about yourself as a college coach? At this point in time, you've been on the scene for 3 years now doing your thing. How are you feeling about being a coach at Memphis? How do you feel about what you've accomplished thus far?
No, I feel great. You know, it comes with experience. I didn't have any college experience when I came in. I understood the game. Obviously, I played for some great coaches over my career. So it's helped me a lot on this level. And I totally understand the kids and how they think from coaching high school and middle school. But I think I'm doing well. You know, the game of basketball on this level is pretty much about relationships and building the relationships with your kids so that they can give you their all while they're out there on the court. And I think I'm doing a good job of that.
Penny, it's been a wild tournament so far this season. Who do you think wins the whole thing?
Man, honestly, to be biased, I want Houston to win it all, to be very honest. I mean, Gonzaga is definitely the favorite because they have, you know, pros at every spot, two pros at every spot. But to me, it's still wide open. I think Baylor and Houston have an opportunity to make some noise in the Final Four. But it's gonna be hard to beat Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Penny, let me ask you this. I think what Juwan Howard's done with Michigan is extremely impressive. Obviously, they didn't get to go all the way, but they didn't have livers. Talk to me about having that NBA experience just in terms of recruiting and how that helps in building a team.
No, Juwan has done a phenomenal job. He's a terrific coach, and I was definitely rooting for him to go all the way as well. You know, the NBA understanding of the game allows kids to come in and get the development part, the teaching part, understanding of the game, because they really ultimately want, these players want to go to the NBA. And it gives us an advantage because we've been there, we played the game at a high level, and to be able to bring that knowledge back to this level, kids really, they want that. So the recruiting part of it, it really helps when you play on the NBA level.
Penny, I am a fan of James Wiseman. I'm watching him with the Warriors right now, and it's been a relatively up and down season. Was out for a little while. I think he had an injury there. But he's averaging about 11-5 or whatever. He's only 19 years of age. He's 7 feet tall. I found myself worried about you and feeling sorry for you because you were supposed to have him, and he only played like three games for you. I'm imagining, like, if he was playing, you would have been in the national title pitch as far as I'm concerned. I want to know, when you reflect on him departing for the NBA, I know you had no problem with it, but what that would have done for your program, and if in any way at all you felt like that was a step in the wrong direction for your program. I'm interested in knowing your thoughts on that.
No, it was beautiful for my program, because James Wiseman, I mean, he's a treasure. You know, he's a great basketball player, but he's an even better kid. Mm-hmm. And to be in my program, I agree with you. We would have had an opportunity to win a national championship with the addition of Precious Achiuwa and the cast of guys that we had around those two guys. He definitely would have been a guy that would have been up in the runnings for Player of the Year with Obi Toppin, and would have did some special things. So I've coached him in high school. I know what he's capable of, and the best is yet to come for him.
Penny, Stephen A. Touched on it. How far away do you think your program is for competing on the biggest stage for a national title?
Well, to be very honest with you, I thought that we deserved to be in the NCAA tournament this year. We felt like we started off slow, but we ended strong. So I think with a couple pieces that we're right there. I mean, the core of the group is still here, and we're doing some special things as far as recruiting. And if we get these guys in here that we know that we can get, that the transfer portal is really strong right now, that we could be right there next year.
Penny, I want to jump in because I want to ask a question. Earlier this in the show, we learned that Roy Williams is retiring, and I brought up the name of a guy like Lavelle Moton, who's coaching at an HBCU right up the road, because I think that it's important that there's a lot of incredible black coaches out there that need these opportunities. And I was proud of the fact that Memphis gave you the job, because you deserve it with what you was doing on a prep level. They did the right thing. You've had three consecutive 20-win seasons. This is what you've been doing, and it's something to be said, because that's home to you. That's where you're from. So that goes a long way. Can you speak to a coach possibly getting a job in their own backyard, where they're from, and what that potentially does for recruiting for a program?
Well, it does a lot. And you spoke about Lavelle Moton, man. I'm a good friend of his, and we've built a great relationship over the years. And I have so much respect for his brain and his knowledge of the game. He just needs an opportunity. He's such a loyal guy to North Carolina Central, and he's been there for a while, that he's given all he's had. Is going to continue to give all he has to that university. But if he had an opportunity to coach in North Carolina or North Carolina State or something like that, I have no doubt in my mind that he would have those guys rolling. And right there in his backyard and doing the best that he could do, he just needs opportunity.
Penny, speaking of backyard or maybe driveway, I hope you didn't think that I was going to go through this entire interview. We need to put Penny back up here. Let me see that car again. What the Polaris slingshot, Penny? Yes. I don't know if we still have. What is happening with that? Because L.A. Stephen A. thinks he's Hollywood now, and I can see him trying to whip around in something like that. So tell us what that's all about.
Yeah, the slingshot, Polaris slingshot, and I, we did a partnership to bring awareness to autism. My son was born with autism. He got diagnosed when he was in the second grade, and through the therapies and the hard work of the therapist, he tested out of it. When he was in third grade. So it's near. Congrats. Autism is near and dear to my heart. And I partnered with Slingshot, and they're doing a great job in the community with everyone that owns a Slingshot. The community is kind of coming together, the Slingshot community, and giving to a different cause. So not only is it a great, great vehicle, they're doing great things for charities around the country. And I'm partnering with them with autism.
That's awesome.
That's incredible. I absolutely love that. My godson, Ashton Chaney, who I love very, very much, his mother, Aisha, is a producer at NFL Network, also is battling autism. So something near and dear to my heart. And I love that you're doing that, paying it forward. Penny, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, you guys. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Keep doing the thing, man. Keep doing your thing.
No question. All right, guys, let's go to the NFL now. The future of Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers is still unclear. Earlier this week, Packers president Mark Murphy refused to say why the team has not restructured or extended Rodgers' contract, despite the team restructuring the contracts of six different players this offseason. Can a girl get a Super Bowl champ? I'm told that we there he is, Jeffrey Saturday. And Jeff, people don't know. You were once Aaron Rodgers' teammate. I need to make sure everyone at home knows that. Good to see you, sir. We will get to you in a hot second there. All right, guys, so we know the relationship between Rodgers and the Pack's been a bit unsteady at times. Max, do you think Aaron should still have beef with Green Bay?
No, he needs to get over it, and he needs to get over it for himself. It's not going to do any good. You know, look, the Packers didn't really do right by him, but they did right by themselves, they felt, by drafting a quarterback in the first round when it looked like maybe they were one weapon away. But you know what? They got him a coach when the other coach wasn't working. They won 13 games together and a playoff game against Russell Wilson in Seattle before Aaron Rodgers even knew what he was doing in the system, right? Then last year, he had maybe the best year of his career in the regular season, was the MVP in a league where Tom Brady's still slinging it and Patrick Mahomes is setting the world on fire. Aaron Rodgers was MVP and deserved it. Won 13 games again, played in the NFC Championship game, and had a chance to win. He had daylight between himself and the end zone and chose, you know, to throw it, not to run it. And then his coach, you know, blundered. I thought that was a blunder by Aaron. Then a blunder by coach giving the ball to Tom Brady, not going for it on fourth down. But the point is, he was in a position to win the Super Bowl this year. Mm-hmm. And now next year, he's going to be even more comfortable. They don't have to use a first-round pick on a quarterback. They're already pretty loaded. They're going to, you would think, get even better in the draft. There aren't that many better situations for Aaron Rodgers, even if you look around the NFL landscape. He's got to get over it because holding on to it is not going to do any good, and he's in a very good competitive situation. He's got to be focused, as I'm sure he is, on winning the Super Bowl this year.
Jeff Saturday, I love you being on the show. I love going at it with you, having the ball and all of that stuff, having a real good time. But I'm going to get real serious here because I'm not joking around. And I don't disagree. I want to give credit to Max because, Max, I'm not refuting anything you're saying on a football level. That's not where my argument is coming from. But I take this stuff with Aaron Rodgers very seriously because I remember years ago when I was told, he was told to just shut up and go play football. We run this organization, you play, and we do it. You don't treat somebody like that of his caliber. This is a guy who's got like a 126-63 record. He's won a Super Bowl champion. You asked him for years to carry this franchise on his back. Now, as of late, they've improved overall. You've got some weapons on the offensive side of the ball. You finally got a running game for the first time in years. Your defense has improved after stinking for so many times over the years. It got to a point with their defense, Jeff Saturday, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not talking about immediately, but in recent memory, where the only thing that was popular about their defense was Clay Matthews' hair. That's it. You could have him in a hair commercial. you could have him in a hair commercial. That was about it. There was nothing to brag about with their defense. Aaron Rodgers carried this franchise on his shoulders. You don't treat him that
way. That's right.
And there's something to be said. There's something to be said of, okay, we're talented, we're good. Yeah, we can make it here. But why did Tom Brady leave? It wasn't just the weapons or lack thereof. I told y'all that I came on this air and reported that day. If Bill Belichick had said to Tom Brady, I want you to stay, Tom Brady would not have left Foxborough. He left Foxborough because he was deemed expendable. We can live without you. We gonna do things our way. We ain't worried about what you want. The hell with the fact that you're Tom Brady.
He also didn't have weapons in
I understand
in
that. The hell with the fact that you're Tom Brady. All I'm saying in closing, and I give this to Jeff because I want to hear what Jeff has to say, is there is something to be said for someone who is inspired and is happy
to be working for you because they feel like they're working with you. The fact that the Green Bay Packers don't make Aaron Rodgers feel that way. Sure, they can compete, Max.
It's stupid.
It doesn't mean that he can't find someplace else with equal talent that's far more appreciative of his greatness than they are. That's what I'm going. Jeff, to that you say what?
Yeah, I agree with you. Listen, when you talk about the beef that Aaron Rodgers would have with the Packers, Max, I agree with you. Like this team is a very good football team. They've been in the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. They've done a good job with coaching and producing and all of those things. But there's a difference when you say the year before when they draft a quarterback in the first round that you know will probably not play for 4 years, maybe five, with the way that Aaron Rodgers is playing. And did that really make them a better football team? Well, if there was some kind of catastrophic injury, maybe. But when you look at Aaron Rodgers and the level of play he's at, I think the beef with the Packers is what's producing part of that, right? This guy is a motivated guy. If you don't believe that he had a chip on his shoulder when he was drafted where he was, you're mistaken. Aaron Rodgers takes things very personally, and that's what takes good to great. And I understand people can use all kinds of factors as motivation. I think he's continuing to use this to motivate himself, but he has carried that football team and the entire organization the last 10 years and has done a phenomenal job at it. But when you look at how do you get over the hump and win the Super Bowl, you got to give him more. And if they would have brought in another receiver last year instead of a first-round quarterback, are you telling me they don't have better production in the playoffs? The coaching staff stays about the same? I think they do. So when you talk about an organization trying to be built for the future, I understand it. The other thing I would say about this whole Aaron Rodgers thing, and this is the question I would have. It's interesting that they restructured six or seven, I can't remember what it is, other players to make space. They may have went to Aaron to ask him, but not wanted to do an extension with it. Now, I don't know that to be facts, but that's normally what happens, right? When I would restructure with the Colts, when they would come to all the vets and say, hey, make this signing bonus, it's going to help us on the cap, most guys do it. But if Aaron felt like he really had the leverage and he could make the Packers show him how much they think of him in the future, he could have possibly tied like an extension onto it, right? So I'm not sure exactly how it played out, but if the Packers wanted to show him, they could have. That's my only issue is you continually get out in front of the public and say, no, we're not gonna stay committed to him. And again, you just said it. He played at an MVP caliber and deservedly won it this past year. I don't see any slippage next year. So the Jordan Love thing, it's a minimum of 3 years before he gets in. And then he's got to get accustomed to playing, and you'll have to pay him. So as I look at this, I just don't understand the thoughts of the organization.
Well,
and the more you go out in front of it and not give it, I think it creates issue.
It seems to me that you don't do that for Jordan Love unless you love him, right? Unless you think he's going to be a Hall of Famer one day, or else why do you make that move? Because quarterbacks are available every year. They're like, no, we're going to get – that's every the guy year. We want to succeed him. Look, they did it with Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. They found value with Aaron Rodgers while Favre was still playing at like MVP level, and they moved on. So I think they – I'm not sure it's at least 3 years. Maybe Aaron Rodgers is great again, and they think Jordan Love is ready, and they're ready to move on, you know, at that point. My point is simply, you're both obviously right about the way they treated Aaron Rodgers. There was a better way to go about it with this guy if you're the Packers.
Right.
That said, all those years that Stephen A., you're complaining about like, you know, he had to carry the whole thing, they didn't do enough, but those years are now over. My point is the table is set. If you're Aaron Rodgers, you got to eat now. You like they spent all these years setting the table and hoping maybe you could win the championship with a little less than you ought to have had because you were so great. Finally, while you're still all world, you were the best quarterback of the regular season last year, clearly in a very competitive year for that. Rodgers deserved it. The table is set now. You want to leave now? I mean, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm like, I'm eating right now. I'm eating this year and next year at least. That's my point. He's got to get over the other stuff. Or, Jeff, if he uses it motivation, fine. But the Packers are ready to win now, especially, I believe, after this coming draft.
Cool. Guys, I want to move on here. By the way, please stop talking about eating, Max. I'm starving. I skipped breakfast this morning. I was a disaster. Okay, so you played with some good quarterbacks. True story. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and you know what it's like to go up against this guy, Jeffrey. Tom Brady left the Patriots and went on to lead the Bucs to a Super Bowl title. Meanwhile, New England finished 7-9 last season with Brady's replacement, Cam Newton. Pats owner Robert Kraft asked about the Patriots quarterback situation. He had a ton of interesting comments. Let me just read one here. He said, look, the quarterback, it's the most important position on the team. We know that. One way or another, we have to get that position solidified. Max, do you think Belichick should take all the blame for the Patriots quarterback situation and their draft struggles of late?
No, he has to take the lion's share, because bottom line is he and I, and apparently no one else in the world, looked at Tom Brady and said, time to move on, you know, from Brady to Jimmy G. And by the way, as successful as Jimmy G has been, Tom Brady has had a full Hall of Fame career since Belichick wanted to do that, since I said Cliff. Like, if all anyone did was did what Tom Brady did in the last 5 years, they'd be in the Hall of Fame. So it was the wrong choice on Belichick's part. He deserves the lion's share of the blame. Also, at a point where he could have still had Tom Brady back, he kind of pushed him out the door. Stephen A. has talked about that many times. It could have, like, there could have been a deal there. He didn't respect them enough, like you guys are talking about the Packers with Aaron Rodgers. But guys, Robert Kraft has to take some of this. He's got to take some of this, because when Brady did the end around Belichick because he wanted to stay, guess what happened? They made Belichick move Jimmy G out of town. That left the cupboard bare. So if you're Bob Kraft and you've done that, at that point, no, you got to make sure you keep Tom Brady, even if it's overriding your GM, because you already overrode him to make sure there wouldn't be anything competing against Tom Brady. So at that point, you got to make sure you retain Tom Brady. Lion's share Belichick, yes, not all of it. Kraft needs some of it, too.
You're wrong. You're totally wrong. Flagrantly wrong, I might add, because you're being so detailed that you're missing out certain details. For example, when they negotiated Tom Brady's deal, he entered the last year of his contract. He was a free agent. Mr. Kraft felt he owed him that. This man had been there 19 years. He wins the division title practically 16, 17 years. Takes you to 9 Super Bowls, for crying out loud. Wins 6. You can't sit up there and try to hold the guy prisoner. So he wanted to go into free agency status, because after letting go of Jimmy Garoppolo, clearly, Mr. Kraft made it very, very clear, I'm siding with Tom Brady. I want to keep him. Bill Belichick said, excuse me, I think that's the wrong move. So what do they have? They sit up there and go, okay, Jimmy Garoppolo's gone. What you going to do? All right, they work out a deal. Tom Brady stays there. You go, you will the 3 Super Bowls. You win 2, okay? And then that very last year, which was the last year of this deal, he still would have stayed if Bill Belichick said he wanted to keep him.
So Kraft's got to make a decision.
Time out. But Tom Brady is saying, I don't want to stay. And I don't want to stay because this man doesn't appear to want me. You can't go. If you're Robert Kraft, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Because on one hand, you can't make Tom Brady stay someplace he doesn't want to stay. And on the other hand, you can't make a champion like Bill Belichick, who is the head coach overseeing all of that success. Oh, you damn sure will want him.
Why? He made him trade Jimmy G?
Excuse me. That's Jimmy G. Jimmy G don't have Tom Brady's resume. You can't. If you're Mr. Kraft, you can't get in the middle.
That's what I'm saying.
You can get in the middle of that when it says, I'm going to support Tom Brady over keeping Jimmy G. But then in 2019, what you can't do is get in the middle and take sides. If
Why?
Bill Belichick says, I'm ready to move on from Tom Brady, and Tom Brady says, I'm ready to leave because he's ready to move on, if I'm Mr. Kraft, I got to let that ride.
No.
You can't hold him accountable.
You didn't let
that.
It ride. Belichick had made his choice already, Jeff. And Kraft did not let it ride then. He said, get rid of Jimmy G. Once the owner does that,
right,
he's got to own the fact that you can't then let your starting quarterback walk out too.
If that's the year, yes, but 2 years
right.
later, 3
Why?
Years later, that's a different ballgame.
No.
That's
same
just about those two.
Is the coverage still there, Jeff?
Go ahead, Jeff.
You can't. Yeah. You can't share the reward and not share the blame, right? So I agree with Max on this. When you stepped in with the Jimmy G situation, you got to step back in. And I completely agree with you on Belichick being able to keep Tom Brady and bring him back into the fold for whatever reason. But you can't play hands off at that point and say, oh, no, we're going to let Bill run his thing now. Because 2 years ago, you didn't let him run it when you forced him to move Jimmy G on. So you can't
but
have
Jeff,
both.
That's not, hold on,
I
Jeff.
Would
hold
say,
on.
I would,
Jeff.
Hold on. Let me say this, though.
Go ahead.
I would say if I'm Bill Belichick, I would not appreciate this criticism where we are. We already know we had an awful season, but let's be honest. We had an unprecedented run, and with the Super Bowls we just had in the recent years, to make a fuss and put this much in the media right now, I don't understand.
But that's not
why stir the hornet's nest when you've had one step off?
Yeah, but y'all act like Tom Brady wanted to stay, and Bill Belichick said no, and Robert Kraft wouldn't want to step in. Tom Brady wanted to leave.
So Kraft should make him want to stay.
Right.
No, Kraft wanted him to stay, but Tom Brady wanted to leave.
Yeah, and he didn't do a good enough job keeping him, right?
I mean, look, he's gone. I stirred the hornet's nest because it's April Fool's, and I'm so mad at everyone on First Take. We should have punked Max and Stephen A. We totally missed out on this one. It could have been the highlight of our week. Pretended the Knicks got somebody. Goodbye, everyone. It would have worked.